The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
So, Marion McKeown, let's start with you and tell us about the drama of the start of the Ghislaine Maxwell trial in New York.
Yeah. Hi, Matt. How are you? It's wall-to-wall coverage here. It started yesterday with the prosecution and the defence sort of laying out their cases pretty much. And it's exactly as you'd expect. The defence is claiming that this is a witch hunt, that they're only going after Maxwell because Epstein is dead and that she is basically a pawn in this. And she is not the sort of she-devil that she's being painted to be. So that's basically the main thrust of their case. I think they're also going to, as it goes on, try to claim that these four women who have remained anonymous, two of whom say they were groomed by Maxwell and then assaulted by Epstein when they were just 14, that they're suffering from a sort of false memory syndrome, etc. So we'll see how that plays out. And the prosecution is saying that she's absolutely culpable in this, that she was involved, she was with Maxwell throughout, she was with Epstein throughout. They just had one of the things that's really, because I've been following this, that I've been perplexed about is the enablers and the co-conspirators, and where do you draw the line? And I think Larry Paul Vizowski, who was a pilot for Epstein for more than 20 years, and he flew Epstein aboard the Lolita Express, as it was known, where Epstein would fly these underage girls to the Virgin Islands, to his ranch in New Mexico, to his house in Palm Beach, and in New York as well, basically for sex parties. And, you know, this guy, I was told by a lawyer that everybody knew. In fact, it was our mutual friend, Ed Hayes. He told me, he said, everyone knew about Epstein for years. He said, everybody knew what was going on. And so you have a pilot here who is a witness for the prosecution, who says that he flew those planes for over 20 years, but that he never knew the girls were underage. Now, you know, again, to me, like, he must have seen these young girls. He said they didn't look underage, and that he never checked their ages or details. But, you know, there was a conspiracy, at least, of people who just looked the other way, who were in that circle as employees or whatever. And I think this is one of the things that the trial is going to look at. But anyway, this chap, the pilot, said that Maxwell was absolutely number two, that yes, Epstein was number one, but she was number two. And that supports the prosecution's case that she was in on everything.
OK, let me bring Cal in.
She groomed these girls and recruited them.
Because, okay, Cal, there's also been significant evidence as to those other passengers or guests of Epstein's, the middle-aged and older men who shouldn't have been there, but who were. And there's some big names amongst them, it seems.
They are indeed, including former President Bill Clinton and former President Donald Trump. There's a picture that the Sun has just posted of Maxwell and Trump at the entrance of the plane. Clinton, with Clinton's elbow resting on her shoulder. The pilot also testified that he never saw any of the girls without their parents. This reminds me of some of the things surrounding the Michael Jackson incident, where some of the parents claimed that they gave permission for their young children to stay overnight in Michael Jackson's place. This is abusive on several levels. But I think, I think Marion is right. I think Maxwell has got some serious legal problems. One of the things that bothers me, Matt, though, is that she was in jail for so long before the trial began. Now, I understand with all of this bail debate now going on in the United States that even though she offered, I think it was $25 million to let herself out, that they still felt she was a flight risk. But I think it's really a bad thing to have somebody sit in prison without a legal process, without the trial beginning, for so many months. I think that's something that needs to be addressed.
But she had been, there was significant reason to believe she was a flight risk, wasn't there? Because she had hidden out for a lengthy period of time,
right,
under an assumed identity.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. But the point is, I think the trial could have been moved up. I mean, all the principles were in place, other than Epstein, obviously, and the trial could have been held a lot sooner and still protected her constitutional rights.
Marion McCone, of course, you're a lawyer, so you know a lot about how these things run. How much more difficult is it going to be, though, to run this trial in the absence of Epstein, who, of course, is dead?
Well, first of all, in response to what Cal said, and I think Cal raises a really good point there. Look, you know, everybody is innocent until proven guilty, and Maxwell has been in horrific conditions in prison in the remand center in Brooklyn for 17 months. But she waived her right to a speedy trial, Cal, because everybody has the right to a speedy trial where it has to start within 70 days or thereabouts. She waived that right. So I think, yes, it is disturbing. But as Matt said, she has passports for three different countries, including France, which doesn't extradite French citizens to New York. She was already on the run, basically, within the United States. She has a huge amount of money and friends and influence. And I don't think $25 million would keep her in the States at this point. Plus, she can fly helicopters and planes. So, yeah, I think that the judge made the correct decision there. But I'm sorry, Matt, you asked how difficult was it going to be for
the
prosecution.
Jeffrey Epstein, yeah.
Yeah, look, the whole point the prosecution is making is this has nothing to do, well, it has something to do with Epstein, but this is about crimes that Maxwell committed in her own right. And they're saying we're not just going after her because Epstein's dead, we're going after her because she behaved appallingly and criminally for over a decade. She groomed and recruited young girls. She normalized sexual abuse, and she took part in the abuse, they also allege, on several occasions. So she would have been, they're saying, look, she's guilty, or we believe she's guilty of these offenses anyway, irrespective of Epstein. And of course, she should be charged because she took part in this in her own right. So I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem. And they've gone out to great lengths to say this is not about Epstein. This is about what she did.
OK, let's move on to other things. And I know that, Cal, you're an enormous fan of musicals. I've discussed that previously. So I think a certain degree of sadness in your part in the death of Stephen Sondheim.
Well, I met him once, as I said in my column today, and I was just overawed by his presence. He was a major transitional figure from the old musical comedies that began with Jerome Kern's Showboat in the 1920s and moved up through Oscar Hammerstein and Richard Rodgers, Oklahoma, Carousel, and many of these others. And, of course, he wrote the lyrics at the age of 25, if you can believe this, for West Side Story, which is now being redone, and the new movie, Steven Spielberg's version, will be released, we're told, next month. He was a genius. He had a dark side. He focused more on human relationships. I mean, Judy Collins' Send in the Clowns version and Barbara Streisand's Alive is Alive, Alone is Alive, Alive is Alone, not Alive, excuse me, Being Alive, were just classic songs and very well known. But so many of his shows were not hugely popular or profit-making, but they were seminal in their transition from the old musical art forms. I don't think we're going to see anybody else like him. There's certainly nothing like it on Broadway right now.
Are you looking forward to the new version of the musical? Do you think it needed a reboot for the 21st century? West Side Story?
Well, I do. And I think I just read some reviews of the initial screenings in Los Angeles, and people are over the top in their praise. Sondheim himself saw it in September, I think, and he was on one of the late-night shows here in the U.S. and said he really, really liked it, and there's some surprises in it that that a lot of people won't expect. So I can't wait to see it in the movie theater. As soon as it comes out, I'm going.
Okay, movie star Matthew McConaughey, once a guest here on this program, Marion, is not running for governor of Texas. Why not? Why was he even thought of as a possible runner?
Well, I think he was putting it out there that he was considering it. So he was very much seeming to think that he might run for it, and even suggested a couple of things and policies that he might follow, and that he would be not a Republican or a Democrat, and a uniter. Well, we'll see how far that gets anyone in Texas these days, because Texas is so polarized. I think he may have had a word with Kinky Friedman. I remember years ago when Kinky Friedman, the iconic writer and comedian and country singer and everything else, decided he was going to have a go running for governor. And I followed him on the trail for a day or two. And apart from the fact that it was probably the most fun I ever had as a journalist, his campaign disappeared without trace, even though he was absolutely beloved in Texas. I think the Texans like to keep their celebrities and their politicians separate. So that leaves the way open, I suppose, for Beto O'Rourke, who is going to be the Democratic challenger. We'll see what he does with it. I mean, there's so much going on in Texas, we could spend a whole day talking about it. But anyway, Matthew McConaughey will be sticking with the movie business, and I suspect it's a very wise choice on his part.
Okay, let's talk briefly about COVID, Cal. How worried are people in America by this Omicron variant? Because it certainly seems to be spooking a lot of people here in Europe.
Well, there's a lot of discussion right now and debate in the United States, Matt, about how President Biden has reacted to this. Many of the things he's doing in canceling entry to the United States from countries in southern Africa, he denounced President Trump from doing when he cut off travel from China. So I think there's been an initial overreaction. It's understandable because some people think there was an underreaction the last time when COVID first hit us. But all of the stuff that I'm seeing coming out of the so-called experts is that this is a mild strain, and we're going to have these kinds of things like the flu for apparently years to come. So if you're vaccinated, from what I'm reading, fully vaccinated, including the booster shot, which I have been, and I hope Marion has been too, and maybe you too, Matt, then you are pretty well protected from it. Okay. So I don't think it's any reason to panic. It's no reason to impose new lockdowns or shutdowns. President Biden said yesterday lockdowns, shutdowns are not in the future, and I think there would be a huge rebellion if there was.
Well, just in the interests of balance and for information, as I started the program by saying that the BioNTech inventor of the first Pfizer vaccine remains very confident that the existing vaccines will be able to deal with this new Omicron variant. However, the chief executive of Moderna, based in the United States, has given an interview to the Financial Times in which he has expressed extreme concern that the effectiveness of the existing vaccines is not going to be enough to deal with this new variant. We'll have to see how this develops.
Problem where you have contradictory information coming out of different sources. And this is what has confused the public from the beginning of this. You had Dr. Fauci on one hand saying you don't need masks, then he said you need masks. He said you don't need to social distance, then you need to social distance. And there have been people all over this on both sides of it, and it's very difficult for Americans, or anybody else for that matter, to get to the actual truth.
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, when that's the saying, was when the facts change, my opinions change. There's a listener here who says that Matthew McConaughey's politics, and I'm not going to try and do the accent here, but they're alt-right, alt-right. I think a few listeners will get that, all right? If only I could do that in a sufficiently good Texas accent, which I can't. All right, I got to leave it there. But Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas from the United States, thank you very much for joining us here in The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.